You're listening to Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan on Boston Public Radio. In June of 2007, Carmen Blandon Tarleton was attacked by her estranged husband, first with a baseball bat and then with industrial strength lie. Tarleton, interestingly, a former transplant nurse herself, wanted a face transplant, but there were concerns about risk and rejection. Ultimately, they were addressed, and she recently became the fifth face transplant patient at Brigham and Women's. You know, you might see this, I did, as an easy choice for doctor and patient, but there are ethical issues. Joining us on the phone to explore them is Art Kaplan. Art is head of the Division of Medical Ethics at NYU's Langone Medical Center. Good afternoon, Art.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you for joining us. So I mentioned in the introduction, Art, donors. Lots of us are donors, organ donors. We have it on our licenses. I think most of us haven't thought about faces. That's one ethical issue. But what are the other big ethical issues involved in face transplants?
There are a lot of tough issues here. One is who you pick to put into the first trials of this. You may notice we've seen face transplants. There are no adolescents. There are no children. There could be, but they may be more difficult to manage. They may be harder to get to comply or follow up with the medicines and things you need to do after a transplant. Remember, it's not just to put a new face on. You've got a lot to do once you get this transplant to make it work. So who goes first is part of the question. What kind of injuries? Mm-hmm. People who've been born with problems, been subject to explosion, an attack. How does that shape their ability to comply with what needs to be done afterwards? Are they too stressed, almost post-traumatic stress disorder, to be able to carry out what they need to do, that sort of thing?
So stay with that for one second. Sure. How do you decide? I'm assuming that there are quite a few people who've experienced horrible experiences from car fires or something outrageous like this mm-hmm. Tarleton woman did. So what are the basic criteria that are used to determine that you're next in line?
Each program, and there are probably about 10 of them worldwide, comes up with an assessment strategy. There is no standardized or agreed upon strategy yet. The procedure's too new. So we're muddling along. Part of the ethicist job is to get to what you're asking for, which is, you know, what's that algorithm? Who do you do mm-hmm. it? Do you say you must talk to a psychiatrist once, twice? Do you have to have a social work evaluation? When I've been asked, and I will confess I've consulted with some of the programs, I think it's important to do a home assessment. If your family members say, we can't deal with the publicity or we can't deal with obligations that we have to try and help this person after such major surgery, because we've got a kid with their own needs or five children or we're too poor, all of those factors become relevant to the ability to make this thing go. So, sadly, I can't answer your question with a simple, we do A, B, C, but it's basically you have to have that psychiatric evaluation. You probably need the home visit. You're probably going to have a waiting period so people can see, you know, whether they really want to go through with this because it could fail, and we'll talk about that in a minute. And we're learning exactly what it is that we need to ask.
Well, I mentioned before about many people putting on their driver's licenses that they're organ donors. Mm. And I don't think, because this is so new, it ever occurred to most of us, it certainly didn't occur to me, that somebody might want your face.
I've been talking about this face transplant procedure and the ethical issues in front of all kinds of audiences. And I always start by asking them, how many of you have checked your driver's license? How many of you thought maybe they might come and use my face? And the answer to that is almost no one.
Right.
So we haven't really absorbed this into society, but the faces have to come from somewhere. They have to come from people who have died. By the way, that's also true for hands and limbs. And you may have seen in the news there's even been some effort to transplant uteruses. So we're in a whole new world of transplant. New kinds of organs are being done first. We now only will use an organ or face, if you will, from someone whose family consents, as well as the person who died, just to get an extra layer of protection in there. Technically, the family doesn't have any status, but we won't do it unless they're consenting too. We wouldn't do it unless we found a donor card. But the truth is, we've got to go back to the law, which is called the Uniform Anatomical Gift Act, that created the checkoffs and the special cards and update it. It doesn't include where we are now with transplant.
Our numbers are 877-301-8970. If you want to speak to ethicist Art Kaplan, everybody has seen stories about this transplant. Carmen Blandon Tarleton was her name. She said on her blog immediately after the surgery, "I know how truly blessed I am and will have such a nice reflection in the mirror to remind myself what selfless really is." Here's one of Carmen's doctors, Art, by the way, at Brigham and Women's Hospital, Dr. Bowden Pomahawk, I believe it's pronounced how it's pronounced. He said after a dire situation, the surgery was a success.
"I first met Carmen in June 2007 when she was airlifted to the Brigham following a vicious attack. Her injuries were among the worst I've seen in my career. She was severely burned, over 80% of her body, unrecognizable to anyone who knew her. Carmen is recovering very well. She's in great spirits. She's working hard to get stronger."
We're talking with Art Kaplan about the ethics of a face transplant. I think I know the answer, or I can guess the answer, but you tell me, because you're the expert, Art Kaplan. Why do we feel differently about faces, someone as donors, someone taking our face, than as opposed to our liver or our kidney or something else?
It's a great question, and I think what we have to say is many of us identify ourselves with our face, who we are, our self-image, our idea of whether we're presentable or attractive, even our self-worth. Very few of us say, "Hey, you know, I identify with my pancreas, I identify with my liver, that's part of who I am."
I do, yeah, actually, but go ahead, Art.
Well, you know, depending on where you party.
Even distinctive liver.
There are evenings when one wonders. But generally speaking, the face fits in there as an entirely special, separate, culturally, emotionally privileged kind of composite tissue. By the way, interestingly enough, so do hands. The things that are exposed to people all the time that we see are the face and the hands. And you can actually, if you have a partner, spouse, you could probably identify them from seeing their hands. So this actually comes in that area as well, kind of special emotional significance of the hands and the face.
Well, there's also the idea from the donor's family's perspective of somebody else walking around in the world with their spouse's face or their mother's face. You know what I mean? I mean, that's...
And that's part of the reason why we do get consent from the donor family right now. It's not legally required, but we are, because they may recognize that face or may have their own views about whether they would be accepting of someone else having a face. The recipient and the recipient's family also have sort of the need to be psychologically strong enough to accept that. And strangely enough, the more tissue you move, the more you resemble someone else. What isn't really known, and part of the reason this is still highly experimental, is how much, without being macabre about it, how much to take from the deceased person to move on to the person who needs the new face. The more you move, the more you look like the person who is the donor. The less, and you put it on the recipient's bone structure, the less they will resemble them. But whether that affects outcome and success and appearance and function, that's part of the reason this is highly experimental.
We're talking to Art Kaplan. He's head of the Division of Medical Ethics at NYU's Langone Medical Center. Obviously, you can tell he's on the phone. You know, I'm thinking as you're speaking, because I have to say, when we knew you were coming, Art, my initial reaction was, hey, this is a win-win. What are the issues? If the person wants it and it improves their quality of life. But as you're talking, I'm saying to myself something that I'm sure is obvious to you, is most of the transplant stuff that we are familiar with from the news is life-saving transplants, whether it's a heart, an organ,
correct,
that sort of thing. This doesn't save a life. This improves, for lack of a better expression, the quality of a life. So is there an issue for people in the medical profession that resources shouldn't go to quality of life issues as much as they should go to saving life issues?
The procedure will probably cost $1 million a piece. It's one of the most expensive things we can do.
Does insurance cover that, by the way?
Wow.
Does insurance pay for that?
Absolutely not.
Does not.
A huge issue that's going to be the future of this field, both for limb transplants, hands, face, are we going to start covering costs like that? All of us have to answer that question, because it's partly a political question. It's not just for the doctor. It's for the insurance company. It's for the Affordable Care Act. Where does this kind of thing fit in? Is the VA going to pay, the Defense Department, for maimed and injured soldiers, et cetera? Let me flip the question around and say, It does sometimes prevent loss of life because people with faces so damaged often commit suicide.
Yeah, okay.
And they have problems eating, breathing. Their basic function is terribly impaired by having this damage. So I started off with the nervousness that you did ethically. Is this, you know, the drugs that you take can shorten your life, these immunosuppression drugs, nasty. But having met people who need the procedure, I understand both the temptation to end your life, and I understand the functional basic eating, breathing problems that they have with a terribly damaged, disfigured face. So is it worth the money? Well, you have to add in those facts. Let me add one other ethical thing to make sure that listeners get to think about this. If the procedure fails, if the face is rejected, if it begins to fall off the person, the question becomes, what are you going to do? Now, in an experiment, everyone has the right to say, I want this experiment stopped. We have had one failure in China of a face transplant. And success, by the way, is not defined just today that everything went well in surgery. It's defined a month or 6 months from now, is the face functioning and is it still in place? If the person loses the face, there's no rescue. And I'm going to put this, almost leave it hanging there. Should we help someone to die who's in a failed face transplant experiment?
And actually, those voters of Massachusetts just narrowly voted against the right
correct.
To die.
Ballot credit.
Can I go back to the $1 million for a second? In this case, did the hospital eat the $1 million? Who paid? Who's paying the $1 million in this Tarleton case, the case at Brigham and Women's?
Hospital ate it so far.
What's
hospital
that?
Hospital ate it so far. They'll try to recover what they can from insurance, but they're going to eat a tremendous amount of that cost. And I can assure you that even the nicest, kindest hospital is not going to do too many of these before they stop if they can't get somebody to pay for them.
We're talking to Art Kaplan, who's a medical ethicist, about these recent spate of face transplants. We've just had another one at Brigham and Women's a few weeks ago, and the doctors talked about it this week. What happened to the person in China you mentioned where the face transplant, you talked about that there's no recovery from this. If you lose your face, they can't fix it. This is a transplanted face. So what happened to the person in China? Did they help that person die?
No, he killed himself.
Oh, gosh.
So,
which is where people like you come in. Yeah, go ahead.
Correct. There are ethical issues that are kind of, you know, dramatic at the front. Should we do it? To who? But one of the things you have to realize with these high-tech, extraordinarily risky procedures, they can go wrong, and we have to also think through what's our exit strategy if it does.
Hey, Art Kaplan, thank you. That was depressing but illuminating.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for being with us. Art Kaplan, the head.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. He's the head of Division of Medical Ethics at NYU's Langone Medical Center. That was upsetting but fascinating.
But I'll tell you, when you see some of the video, and I don't know which one it is, when you see some of the successful transplants, the individuals after the fact, when they finally decide to go in front of a camera, and you hear their voices, and the I don't know if joy is the right word, but I think it is when you read this blog quote from this woman, this Tarleton woman, staggering that people have, the doctors have the scientific skills to be able to do this amazing thing.
And she also talked about being able to turn her head and lift up her chin without pain. So it's obviously a huge, dramatic trade-off. But when you're in that sort of pain and suffering, you know, I think as she said, she was hoping that this could rescue her. And so far, thank goodness, it's going very well. Okay. Up next, we are going to be joined, as we are at 1 o'clock every day, by our open mic guest today. It's Emily Rooney of Greater Boston and Beat the Press here on WGBH. Stay tuned. Emily has a shocking revelation about her life on the MBTA. That's next on Boston Public Radio, 89.7.